Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private pay therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hi there, welcome to session 70 of Selling the Couch. Hope you are having a great week. So we had the most random weather over the weekend. Well, on Friday, we went down to downtown Philly, where we celebrated with the Villanova men's basketball team because they won the NCAA national championship this year. And we had just an awesome time on Friday. But on Saturday, we got random snowfall. It ended up being a couple of inches. Rain with snow, it was just not a good situation. I don't know if you can tell from my voice, but I am so ready for spring. Today's podcast is with a private practitioner that is doing some amazing things and thinking really outside of the box of what it means to be in private practice. But before I tell you a little bit about Rebecca and Rebecca's story, I wanted to take a moment to thank today's podcast sponsor, which is Brighter Vision. Brighter Vision is a company that helps therapists build beautiful websites. If the thought of creating a website on your own and managing it just absolutely scares you, I encourage you to check out Brighter Vision. You can learn more at sellingthecouch.com/Brighter Vision, and that link actually gives you 30 days absolutely free. Our podcast guest today is Rebecca Wong. Rebecca is a licensed clinical social worker out in New Paltz, New York, and Rebecca, as I mentioned, is creating this career that is just simply outside of the box and is so awe-inspiring to hear about. In today's session, we're going to cover a number of different things. The first thing we're going to cover is this idea of niching. I have talked about niching in multiple sessions of the podcast, but every time that I get to have a private practitioner who's doing it really well, I just like to pick their brain on what's working for them. We're going to spend some time just talking about how Rebecca's been able to build a private pay practice around niching. But we're going to go really deep also into how she's been able to do this despite being in a small town. And then we dive really deep into some of the new things that Rebecca is doing on her blog at connectfulness.com. And she is just, I don't even know how to put it into words. She's doing all sorts of things, including building courses, and she's in the Healthcasters podcasting community, so she's going to be launching a podcast very soon. And it's really neat to see some of the things that Rebecca's doing, but I think, and you can tell from her voice, that it's something that she is so passionate about. So we'll get right to it. So here is my conversation with Rebecca Wong at RebeccaWongLCSW.com and at Connectfulness.com. Hi, Rebecca. Welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hi, Melvin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, looking forward to our conversation. You got a brand new spanking office. You are ready to go.
Totally.
You know, one of the things that I really appreciate about you is the way that you have structured your career and the way that you've built your private practice, it focuses on the things that are really important, you know, relationships and family. And you have done, you've built this private practice in just a very like non-traditional way. And I wanted to start there. Like, what motivated you to do that?
Well, I think, you know, I've focused on the things that were most important to me in building my private practice. And that is my relationship and my family. Those are just like my key, my core central values. It's how I grew up. It's my why. It's the reason that I do the work I do. And so I tried to build a practice that allowed me to be as present as I could with the people that I love.
Yeah, no, I love that. Have you read that book? I forgot what the exact, I think it's like the top regrets of the dying or the five regrets of the dying. It's like this interview with this like nurse practitioner who's deals with folks that are in hospice. And have you come across this book at all?
You know, I haven't, but I worked in oncology at the beginning of my career for like a decade. So I think I'm also pretty informed by end of life type of information and just what people think about most at the end of their lives. It all comes down to relationships.
Yeah. And I found that's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, I think a lot of times, especially starting a small business, we can be like, how do we create a certain income from it? Right. And ultimately the things that matter are those relationships.
Yeah. If we're not having good relationships with the people in our lives, how do we help other people have good relationships in their lives?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it impacts like even things at a financial level, right? Like if we don't feel like that other part of our life is balanced, then how do we, then I feel like you're much more likely to succeed if it is balanced.
Yeah, very much so. I agree.
You know, just transitioning over a little bit, one of the really cool things is that you have been able to build this very successful practice in a very small town. How in the world did you do that?
You know, I just kind of found a flow. I found the things that I was interested in doing, and I've done it in a lot of different ways over the years. I haven't gotten too stuck in things that aren't working. I just kind of keep moving. But I keep finding the things that are driving me, because if I'm not being driven, then I'm not going to do anything with it. I'm going to lose my steam. So early on, I was working with a lot of postpartum moms, and I was working within that postpartum kind of community a bit. And then I finally got my own office space, and a lot of those moms came with me, and I started taking insurance, and then I left insurance and I got another office space, and I started working with more couples, which was a kind of natural transition from postpartum moms to working with couples, because we know that relationships really struggle in the postpartum years. Mm. And so there was this flow, and it just kind of all was really happenstance, but it's worked well for me.
You know, I was just thinking, like, as you were talking, I don't imagine that, you know, you had this idea, like, you know, a couple of years down the line, this is exactly what my practice is going to look like, right?
No idea.
and I think that's the beautiful thing, right? Like, I think a lot of times we let our fear of what we want and we let the perfection kind of kick in, when in reality, I think sometimes you just have to put something out into the world and things evolve. And I think trusting ourselves, knowing that we have that capability to evolve.
You know, I think there's so much to that, Melvin. I love that the way you just said that. There's something about trusting ourselves and knowing that we have that capability to evolve. There's, I think that's kind of the everything, you know, in terms of finding your flow and finding that space where you blossom and people get to know who you are. Because the thing that I don't think we talk about enough as therapists is that we are our brand, you know, like, who are you and how do you show up in the world and what kind of relationships do people consistently have with you, no matter which people we're talking about? That is so much of why people will pay for services with you. When you get out to do things in a more unconventional way, you have to know who you are and how you show up in that way.
You said one of the early things was that you started working with postpartum moms. How did you go about finding your ideal clients being in the town that you were in?
Well, that was probably the easiest thing. I was a mother myself, and I was very much entrenched in a lot of the mothering community. When I opened up my private practice, my littlest was about a year old. So maybe a little bit younger, but still kind of in that framework. So I was in the mom community, and it wasn't hard just to kind of throw out there and say, like, on mother message boards or in the places where the other moms and I hung out, you know, just kind of like put my cards out there or something along those lines. I was in the community, so it was easy to just kind of start. And I started by running an adjustment to motherhood group. So that was also just a way for people to get to know me.
Yeah. Do you think like starting with a group like that, I just like when you said that, I just thought that's like an easier transition, right? There's like something very normalizing about that as opposed to, you know, let's talk about like postpartum depression or something like
that. Yeah. You know, I think the interesting thing about running a group is it's hard to go into running that group if you're thinking about monetizing it and making it a like really viable, if you need to make it that source of income. I think that makes it really difficult to do it successfully. It doesn't mean it can't be done, but I think if you can flip the switch and if the motivation can be on getting people to know and trust you, I think then the monetization comes along for the ride instead of having it be the focus.
I feel like that's a lesson that I've learned this whole past year with the blog, you know, because I think if you come from the perspective of being kind and wanting to provide as much value, you know, the trust and all those other things, you know, the monetization that will come.
Yeah.
How did you, it's going to sound like a silly question, but so when you were starting that group, I imagine there was a part of you, it's like, oh my gosh, I have to make some money from this group. But so how did you hold that thought while saying, you know what, this is really about me building trust and giving and helping these women as much as I can?
For me at that time, I had the luxury of mostly being a stay-at-home mother. And I ran that group when my husband was home and with our daughters. So there wasn't too much financial pressure. There was certainly the, if I'm going to go back to work, I have to actually make money doing it. I can't just be showing up all the time. But I had the ability to not price that group too high, you know, like it was kind of low fee for each person that showed up. And the more people that showed up, the more money I made, kind of thing. So it just kind of took a natural shape. I didn't think about it too much, but it worked. And I got a lot of individual clients out of it too.
That's interesting. And then you said one of the things you said earlier was that you were really active in like forums and groups. So was this like online, offline, both?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Yeah. It was a local community that existed both on and offline.
Okay. How did you go about finding that community initially?
I was just a part of it already.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I think we're all part of different communities, right? Mm-hmm. Like whether it's religious communities or just local, we're all part of some kind of community. So where are you already? What are you already doing? Who do you already know? Who knows you? How can they, you know, how can you serve your own community better?
You know, I think that's a good way of looking at it because I think sometimes the natural tendency is how do I find a new community and try to build instead of thinking about like, where do I already belong?
I think it's so much easier just to start with where you are because, well, we know that with our clients, right? We start with where they are. But when you're already part of the community, the trust is a little bit already built in. You're not an outsider coming in trying to offer something. So I think that makes it a little bit easier.
Right. So as you created this group, you started building these relationships, that trust that was established led to some individual sessions. And then how did you start to get the word out about what you were doing among colleagues?
Well, I was doing a lot of different trainings at the time. I trained with Karen Kleinman and later went on to do some more trainings. And one of the things I was doing was, well, I also ran it's a ICANN, it's International Cesarean Awareness Network. I was a co-facilitator for that group. So that just got me seen by more people within the birth world. And I just started to get a lot of referrals. I would go and meet with some OBGYNs and some midwives. But for the most part, the mothers within the community were making referrals to me. I got some referrals from local providers, but I got a lot more referrals just from others in the community.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting you say that because I think one theme that has definitely come up in having conversations with other practitioners is just the importance of relationships as a way to generate referrals.
Yeah.
And I think it's something we don't talk about, right? Like, especially in this day and age of like social media and do this and do that, right? Like at the end of it, it is about the connections that we form with others.
So much so. You know, whether they're your friends and they know somebody who's getting into trouble and they give out your name or someone that you kind of know or someone that you passed. Like I just moved into a new office and I made sure to introduce myself to the guy at the deli two doors down because you never know, right? You want people to know who you are.
And I think, you know, as I think about this conversation, the thing is, we're pretty good at this, right? Like, we're good at, like, building trust with people and making people feel safe. And it's just, it's an extension of what we do naturally, forming these relationships.
Right. I think that's the piece that we forget. We put so much pressure on ourselves. And I know I've fallen into this trap at different times where we want to network, you know, we want to have people learn about us, but we forget that we're just kind of naturally good at this and we do it anyway. So when we take that pressure off and we just show up as ourselves, it happens so much more fluidly.
Mm, that's amazing. I wanted to transition a little bit. So I wrote horseplay. This is amazing.
Yeah.
When I look at your website. So tell us a little bit about horseplay, because I think it's just such a cool out of the box way of being a clinician.
So horseplay is not totally my baby, but it's a local colleague. She is an equine. She works with horses all day long. She has a equine center and she is an equine specialist. And she has done EGALA training, which stands for equine assisted, I don't remember all the actual details, but it's an amazing training where what you do is you look at the way people interact with the horses. I'm myself doing a different training. It's called animal assisted play therapy, and I'm using my dog in sessions, but also it covers horses as well. So what we do together is we work with couples. She also works with other therapists, other mental health professionals, and works with individuals. But with the couples, we bring the couples out to the paddock with the horses. We run them through some obstacle courses. They're not mounted. They're not on the horse, but they're interacting with the horse. And it just gives us such a unique window into helping them observe themselves. You know, who's taking a step forward? Who's holding back a little bit? Who's in the lead? Who's more directive? We get to watch all these little pieces, and the horse is such an intuitive but also large animal. And so it naturally evokes so much more. And then we get to talk about that in kind of this playful way, because it's so much easier to observe yourself around another being like a horse or a dog than it is to just sit back and observe yourself with your partner. And so by incorporating the horse, we kind of lighten things up in a really fun way and get people into some really deep stuff really quickly without even noticing that it was deep.
That's so cool. Like, I'm like speechless. Like, that makes perfect sense, because I imagine that for any of us, right, like seeing us being silly and doing something like with a horse, like it makes so much, it's easier to understand why we do the things, what we do and how we interact as a couple.
Yeah.
How did you find the specialist to collaborate with?
A friend of mine who often cuts my hair, cuts her hair too.
Wow. Relationships,
you know,
right?
Yeah, it's relationships. Yeah. It's, that's all it is. It's just when, you know the people in your community, they make connections for you, and all you have to do is kind of be open to it.
That's really neat. One of the other things that I know that you're starting to do is just like creating courses and doing all sorts of things. I feel like everyone, you should definitely check out Rebecca's website, because you're doing some amazing things. And I saw that you were creating this ReSpark course, right? And how did the idea for something like that even come from?
I sat back one day and I was just kind of noticing what all of my sessions with so many, I work with a lot of parenting couples, but not all of my couples are parents. Some of them are just living in their own kind of messes, whether that's because of childhood trauma or something else. And I just started to notice that there were themes that were like consistent and coming up in my work over and over again. And I was raising my fees at the same time and actually making my practice a little bit smaller. And I was being interviewed by some local magazines, and all these type of themes and topics were coming up. And I was starting to think, maybe there's a way of me reaching more people without actually having to see more clients.
Yeah, right. Which is a different way, right? Because I think naturally we think, we have to see clients, we get paid. If we don't, we don't.
Right. So what if I put it together as an e-course, right? Or a workshop? There's different ways for me to kind of put the same material, because I'm covering this material in my sessions with my clients. This is coming up over and over again with many, many different couples. So what if I just put that together?
And then did you have like any fears of like, what if I put this e-course together and what if people like, I don't know, people end up getting the e-course, would that mean that I get less clients? Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I think I thought about it a little bit, but I think it's just the beginning. Because the e-course, the way I've kind of put it together, is it gives them a lot to start working on, to start examining, and to start thinking about. It's like a jump start before starting therapy. But I think it also gives people a window into who I am and what working with me might be like. So if they want to do a deeper dive after finishing the e-course, then working with me is a natural progression. And if they don't need that, then they don't need that, and they still got the e-course. So it's a win-win either way.
Yeah, I like the way that you're looking at it. That's all.
Thanks, Melvin.
I also just wanted to ask you, because you're starting this like cool, like awesome group. It's called The Practice of Being Seen. And I think that is something so many of us struggle with. Tell us a little bit more about what motivated that.
So this is like my baby right now. The practice of being seen has come out of a lot of collaboration with colleagues. One in particular colleague is Marisa Gowdy, who's not a therapist, but she's my writing coach. And we've been working together for a long time. She also lives in my community and has children around my children's age. So we've known each other for quite a while in face-to-face interactions. But she's also started to partner up and work with a lot more therapists. And we are starting to realize that there's this piece that therapists often don't know how to put themselves out there. We have some pretty big aspirations about changing the world. But when it comes to allowing ourselves that spotlight, it gets really scary. And so there's a whole process involved in that. And so this group is really a place to kind of explore that process. We go deep into a lot of different pieces of ourselves. It's an intimate group. It's pretty small, and we space out when we allow new people in. So we're really working to keep the safety of that space so that we can keep that process pretty deep. Because, you know, we're therapists. We like to think pretty deep about things, especially when it comes to ourselves and what it means to be seen in the world and put ourselves out there. And one of the biggest things that we're kind of playing with in there right now is, what are our whys? You know, we all know how we do the work we do. We all know who we work with. But why? Why do we do the work? What's like the thing that's driving all the way down at the core of your being? Why this? Why this particular work? Why this population? So we're exploring stuff like that.
That's really cool, because I was actually like watching a TED Talk last week, and I forgot the guy's name, so I'm not even going to try to remember it. But he was like, so it was a talk on like just branding and recognition. And one of the arguments he was making was, if you look at some of the most well-known companies, they answer that question of why, like, why do they get started?
You know? I've seen that same talk. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but yeah. I know which one you're talking about.
But I just thought that was interesting, because that's so true, because it's much deeper than the here's the therapy I do, or here are the workshops that I, whatever it is, right? There's a much deeper meaning to it.
Yeah, there's usually a thread, you know? Mm-hmm. We're all therapists for a reason. We all have our stories. And if we can hone in on those stories and like really get to the core of them, I think that's where we can really build trust and connect with potential clients and with an audience. Some of us have aspirations to be TED Talk speakers one day, and this is kind of the beginning of all that too.
Awesome. Where can someone find more information about the Practice of Being Seen group? Because it just sounds awesome.
On my Connectfulness website, there's a For Professionals tab, and it's underneath there.
Awesome. And it's at connectfulness.com.
Yes, that's with one L.
Awesome. I'll spell it out properly in the show notes. Are you ready for the hot couch round?
Sure.
We have not done this in a while, so I'm kind of like excited about this. What's a daily habit that you believe contributes to your success?
I think training my dog. It really gets me to slow down and just pick up on more little details, and especially with myself.
What's an online resource like Psychology Today or Dropbox or whatever it is that's been invaluable to you on your private practice journey?
I'm going to plug Marisa Gowdy. She's my co-facilitator with the Practice of Being Seen, and she has some amazing workshops coming up herself and webinars all about writing and finding your stories.
What's your favorite business-related book, a book that's really impacted you as a private practitioner?
Stephen Covey's The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I find that a lot of the stuff he talks about in there parlays not only into business, but also into relationships.
Awesome. What's one tip that you would give to someone who is thinking about starting a private practice?
not to put too much pressure on yourself about the money, but to start thinking about what you want your ideal day to look like.
That's a good one. Imagine that you are starting your private practice all over again. You have $500 and your laptop. What's that first step that you would take toward building your practice?
Oh, God, this is such a great question, Melvin. The first step that I would take to building my practice, I would just want to get to know my community. And I'd want to start putting together a website that talks about me, not specifically like, hi, I'm Rebecca, and this is the training I've had, and this is what I do, but talks about, like, you know, who I am in terms of how I connect to people. These are the places where I'm going to reach people. This is the stuff that's coming from my heart. I want to start to figure out what that message is, because just the process of figuring it out helps you even in your clinical work when you're sitting in a room with a client. When you know who you are in that kind of message-related way, it changes the work too. So I'd want to invest some of that time and money into my website.
Awesome. Rebecca, you are off the hot couch.
Melvin, this was so much fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. What are some of the best ways that folks can get in touch with you?
I think my Connectfulness website pretty much has it all. I have a private practice website too, but it connects through on the Work With Me page on off Connectfulness. So I just say go to connectfulness.com.
Awesome. I will definitely link to both here in the show notes. Rebecca, thank you again.
Thanks, Melvin.
Hey there. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Rebecca. Man, just sitting back and just reflecting on the time that I had with Rebecca, it was just so neat. And it was so inspiring for me to think about some of the ways that I can start to build out my own career. You know, one of the things that has been on my heart these past couple of weeks is this idea of building a career around our lives as opposed to a life around a career. I think that second part, building a life around a career, is so normal. And I think we as clinicians, we often talk to our clients about the opposite, right? Building, being intentional and having a balanced life. But it's very hard. I think it can be very challenging in private practice with so many things to do to continue to foster that idea of building a career around a life. And that's one of the things that I really admire about Rebecca, is that she's doing that really well. Show notes to today's episode and the resources that Rebecca mentioned can be found at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 70. If you'd like to continue the conversation we started on today's podcast, feel free to check out the Selling the Couch Facebook community at sellingthecouch.com/community. We are rapidly growing and are about to hit 1,500 members. It's just a wonderful and very vibrant community. As we wrap up, I again wanted to just take a moment to appreciate and thank today's podcast sponsor, which is Brighter Vision. Brighter Vision is this company that helps you build your own private practice website. When you sign up with Brighter Vision, you get someone that will talk to you and will let you really flesh out what you want for your private practice website, and then we'll go to work on creating that for you. It is a very reasonable cost. They're around $59 a month for complete support of your website, any updates. They will do all sorts of cool stuff, like if you want to have a payment portal so that clients can pay you on your website, they'll set that up for you. They will fully search engine optimize your website and all of those different things that go into creating a powerful and effective website. You can get your first month absolutely free at sellingthecouch.com/brightervision. Again, show notes to today's episode can be found at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 70. Thank you so much for continuing to tune in to today's podcast and continuing to share the podcast with colleagues. We are going to pass 90,000 downloads the day that I release this podcast episode, and we are just trucking toward 100,000 downloads, which is crazy. I'm not going to get emotional, so I'll save that for later. Thank you again, and I really appreciate you. Have a great rest of your week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.